Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Tuesday, December 4th, Carborough Board of Aldermen meeting. This is a regular business meeting for us. The first item on our agenda is requests from visitors and speakers from the floor. Is there anybody here to speak on a matter that is not already on our printed agenda? I see Dan Bond is signed up. Is that on one of the items on the agenda?
Yes, it is.
Okay.
Dan Bond with Lend Lease.
Oh, okay.
Regarding the minor amendment to the CUP.
Okay.
Willow Creek Covenant.
Sure. Okay. All right. Let's see. Does that bring us to this item right here that I hold in my hands? Or? Well, I mean, that's resolution and proclamation, but shall we do that at the end? Oh, let's do it at the end.
Let's do it at the end.
Okay. All right. Then I believe that brings us to the consent agenda. Is there a motion?
I'd like to move the consent agenda.
Second.
All right. The consent agenda has been moved and seconded.
Can I make a brief comment?
Yes, go ahead.
I just wanted to say I'm going to vote against the consent agenda just with respect to item number three. And it has nothing to do with how I feel about our esteemed fellow alderman, Dan Coleman. I think he's a wonderful alderman. I think very, very highly of him. But I'm just a little concerned about the precedent that this would set for future kind of political decisions. We might not always all be in agreement on something like this, so I want to vote against it. I just wanted to make my reasoning known.
All right. All those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed?
Nay.
The matter passes 6-1.
What that means
is that we have a tree planted, a new tree, replacing an old tree that had died, and we will be putting a plaque on it honoring Alderman Coleman and his service.
And let me just say thank you all very much. I really appreciate it, and I was very touched when I saw that in the agenda. And I do want to acknowledge that Lydia's concern is important, and when you all get my reports from Australia, I imagine you'll all want to resign and move there. So there'll be lots of trees planted in the yard, but until now, just the one. Thank you.
All right, very good. All right. Apologize, I'm just loading here. I believe that means that we have just passed the Willow Creek conditional use permit matter so that you gentlemen were here for.
So we hope you didn't come for.
So,
you come from Charlotte.
Was there something you needed to say about it, or you were just here in case you needed?
I was just here in case.
Okay, so that's only 1 hour you get to bill them. Sorry. All right, very good.
You didn't come from Atlanta.
That brings us to a report on the work of the Affordable Housing Task Force.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Trish, do you want to give a few opening remarks or turn it over to the task force members?
Yeah, we didn't really talk about who should take the lead in explaining this.
No. Trish could, and we can.
No, I told Trish we could.
Oh.
Shall I do it? You want to do it, Michelle?
You can do it, and I'll have some
okay.
to say later.
All right. So basically, we were kind of at Michelle's initiative, we were tasked with reviewing the affordable housing ordinance in regard to the requirement or the desire to have affordable housing as a component of new developments. And the meeting schedule we had and all that is laid out in the agenda item. And we basically were looking at several items. One is the fact that we're in a situation now where developers might choose not to build any affordable housing at all, and that was not really acceptable to us. A second is a concern about the sustainability of the community home trust housing, which Robert Dowling's been telling us about for years. And a third was the and related to that was the radical cuts in federal housing support that we've seen in recent years, and that there's no sign of those being returned. So we started out, we looked at the Chapel Hill recently adopted ordinance, which is an inclusionary zoning requirement. And we kind of felt like there were a few problems with that we didn't see it as being right for Carrboro. One is that it was a one-size-fits-all. It didn't have any flexibility in it. Another is that it basically was mandating a certain kind of housing as the only affordable housing that we would build. And the third was that we didn't necessarily know that it was sustainable within the home trust model over the long term. So as we looked at that, we basically, and the other thing was that we're in a different situation than Chapel Hill in that we have the small house ordinance, which is accepted practice. And so we took a stance of what can we do to make building affordable houses more desirable than building small houses, because that's what we're seeing. That's what we saw, like, with Claremont, is that he wanted, I'll build the small houses, I won't build affordable houses. And so what we came up with was an idea that, and this is what our proposal is to the board, that mixes, allows a mix of built affordable units and payments in lieu, and is the main piece of it. And another piece of it is also cutting the percent. This is something we talked about since 2009, that there was a way to, if we cut the percent of housing from 15% to 12.5% and cut the cost the housing goes to the home trust from 80% to 65%, then that's neutral for the developer. But what it does is it eliminates the need for that initial subsidy for the home trust. In other words, they're getting the property at the already pre-subsidized price, and that was going to be a big help financially. So what we're proposing is lowering that and then requiring that of that percent, a minimum of 5% be built units, and the addition, remaining 7 of the 12% is subject to negotiation between the developer and the board, and with the further provision that only built units qualify for a density bonus. So in other words, a developer gets a further incentive for built units rather than payments in lieu because they get the density bonus with those. So the idea is to give some flexibility, something that can respond to the changing conditions in different developments. And I want to stress the fact that this discussion is not the be-all and end-all of what we need to do with affordable housing, that there are many, many other areas of housing that need to be addressed outside of new construction and new developments. And part of the importance of building up our Affordable Housing Trust Fund through the acceptance of payments in lieu is that it puts us in the financial position to seek other opportunities to build or support other kinds of housing, or even to just obtain land, bank land potentially, for affordable housing. There's lots of things we could do with those funds, of course. So that's kind of it in a nutshell, if either of you want to add.
Yeah, I mean, we also spoke briefly of considering an affordable housing bond, given how few funds are coming from the federal government to really think in that regard. And obviously, as services are cut, you know, we'll probably be thinking in that regard more and more, which makes it unrealistic given all the pressure being foisted upon localities. But the fact that our town has such a significant affordable housing issue, to try to be as creative as we can to find ways in which to make housing affordable in our town.
Michelle?
Yeah, and I think this is just one, like Dan said and Sammy, one part of the process. And I think our committee probably needs to meet, continue to meet to figure out what's next. And also, we talked about having a long-term strategy, and so this is just one part of it. The planning board had some community dialogues back in October, had three of them, and it would be good for us to consider some of the feedback that they have from those dialogue sessions as we talk about a long-term strategy.
And to get a report from the planning board.
Yeah.
Jackie, go ahead. I have somebody, one person signed up to speak on this, but if you want to go ahead.
I have a couple things. One, it's a really nice starting point, and it's really good new ways of looking at problems that the old ways are no longer significantly addressing. I want to be very sure that the Community Home Trust is included in these conversations, and that the Community Home Trust Board is included in these conversations as well. I think that this gives us a good starting point maybe for a significant work session, not just a half-hour work session, but like a that's the only thing we're talking about at that meeting kind of work session. I'm a little bit uncomfortable with the idea of decreasing the amount of required open space. It's exchanging one good for another good, and I'm not sure that that's always that's always in the best interest of the whole. And I also think that that would open a door for exceptions to 40%, that we were going to build these houses, but we can no longer do those houses, so can we build these other? It's just like messing with the watershed. It's something I don't want to mess with because I think it does a lot of both community good and environmental good, so... I know that we're always in the position of exchanging. Unfortunately, we're often in a position of balancing economic good with environmental good, and that's a position I know nobody on this board likes to be in. Anyway, I would just like to suggest that we use this as a jumping-off point for a larger discussion, and that we make sure that the community. I had a conversation with Robert earlier this week that make sure that the Home Trust was involved in this.
Okay. Omar Zinn is signed up, if you would come up.
Been a while, Omar.
Yeah.
Good. Hey, Omar.
You want to miss Dan's celebration and just Marty, I don't know if Marty's up here. Yeah, I am off the agenda for tonight. David and I confirmed that, so I just wanted to throw that out. Thanks for listening to me. Met with Dan and Michelle earlier in the year, and without taking up too much time, just wanted to kind of throw out my perspective as someone who provides affordable housing. I think the current model is unsustainable right now. With the housing market in the place that it's been, this is not news to any of you guys. I mean, I think I've spoken to almost every one of you about it, but just for the record, I think it's very difficult for one group to provide the majority of affordable housing. I know the town kicks in funds, but ultimately, the housing market needs to be robust and profitable, such as when this ordinance was kind of crafted back in early 2000. And personally, I like the idea of if it's a community belief of the community getting behind it, and whether that be in the format of a bond. No one likes a tax because nobody likes to pass a tax because there's always an election, and no one likes to answer to that. But some form of funding to create more affordable housing. And I also like the idea of what I would call affordable market rate housing, which I believe is created through density. We have a finite land supply, and to prevent, further further traffic and, more imports daily to the university, I'm a big fan of market rate housing. But dense market rate housing, size limited, small, 600, 800 square foot, very dense market rate housing, which in itself will be very affordable. One last point I want to make. When a developer finishes, and I've spoken with Robert and several of you about this, but when a developer finishes a home, a land trust home, one of the major problems we have currently, which is that there's no requirement that the land trust close on that house when a CO is issued. I mean, I've waited longer than 6 months, 7 months, 8 months to close on a land trust home without any additional compensation. So just in fairness, you know, I would like for you guys to consider, you know, sooner rather than later, and I'm almost done with my land trust homes out at Claremont. We're working on our last two right now, but I would like for you guys to consider some ordinance or some provision that, you know, will require the land trust to pay, you know, a nominal fee, but something which equates ultimately to, you know, that loan payment. I mean, you know, there's a loan. I mean, there's $500, $700 every month to the bank on that note. And, you know, you sit on a house for 7, 8 months, 6 months, whatever it might be, you know, there goes $5,000, $6,000, $7,000 down the drain, in addition to the other monies lost on the unit. So that's my 2 cents for what it's worth. Thanks for listening to me.
Thanks, Omar.
As well as your $5,000.
let me add that Omar's comments when we met with him, and we met with a number of developers back in the fall, and you know, part of our discussion about possibly having an affordable housing bond would be that there could be funds to provide relief for developers under certain circumstances that we don't yet know what they are, because in a sense, you know, we're creating a requirement for them to build a certain kind of housing, but we're not creating the available market to buy those houses within any time certain. So I think it could be properly concluded that we have some responsibility to intervene in certain circumstances there, as Omar is suggesting.
Okay. Anything else on that matter?
Yeah. With regard to this suggestion of reducing the percentages from 15 to 12 and the cost from 80% to 65%, does that reflect an idea that because we'll have fewer units, we want to make sure they really reach people that we want them to reach? Or was there some other thing?
Well, the idea, and this was something that Robert Dowling and I worked out together back in 2009, and the idea, it was started from the idea of, you know, what to do about the need for subsidy. So can we get the homes into the land trust without a need for subsidy? And the answer was, well, we can, but we don't want to increase the cost to developers, especially in a bad economy. So to keep it neutral, kind of the sweet spot where that's equal is about 12 and a half units, and 65% is what we worked out.
Go ahead.
The attachment, I mean, I'd like to move the item, but there's room for additional components, and so I just wanted to move the item with Michelle's suggestion, working with the planning board, especially their affordable housing subcommittee, and Jackie's recommendation for having a larger discussion amongst board members and continuing work with the land trust.
At a work session.
Right.
At a work session.
A second.
Could we add to that just for input, be nice to just send this to the board of the home trust so we could get their input on it.
And I just want to also make sure it's understood. This speaks a lot to new affordable houses, and so one of our other challenges is to find ways in which to make existing stock affordable too, and there are other entities in town that work on that kind of affordable housing, so we need to also invite them. And I know that the planning board did an excellent job in including a lot of those folks in the discussion, so I'm not, I don't think they'll be ignored. They're already on the radar.
Okay. It's been moved and seconded. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Matter passes unanimously.
Thank you for that work.
Yes, thank you, guys. That brings us to item D2 regarding a request to amend stormwater volume control provisions. I think I might go straight to Ken Ryder. If you would come up and explain briefly what your request is and why you're making it.
Thanks for your time tonight. In your packet is a proposed amendment to the landing ordinance to address some of the recent stormwater requirements that were approved in June of earlier this year. If you recall, there were two components that were changed. One was adopting the Jordan Lake rules, and then there was a special Town of Carrboro provision that got to controlling volume requirements. And without going into kind of the technical detail, as it relates to Shelton Station and projects that are kind of urban infill or have a large amount of impervious surface for redevelopment, the discussion and analysis that was done when the volume requirements were passed anticipated some further revisions and refinement. And as folks would probably recognize, the first project out of the chute usually figures out how those ordinances might impact them. So our zoning was, as you know, we went through a lot of time and effort back in January to get the property rezoned. And then through the process of doing our conditional use permit, these new ordinances were adopted. Well, based on the redevelopment plan that we had to redesign the entire stormwater system to try to come to not only addressing the Jordan Lake rules, which we had always anticipated back in January, but this new volume requirement that got to controlling the volume of runoff off the site was something that we had to go back and had spent a lot of time and money trying to basically redevelop that. So we have a requirement that, based on the economic feasibility and a lot of the other components we're trying to meet being green and LEED and sustainable, having our affordability requirement, trying to meet some affordable office components of the marketplace, there's an economic component to this where we just can't an economic argument. We just can't really physically or financially put more design requirements on the site. So one of the things that we're looking for right now is some flexibility in determining what the exact stormwater requirements need just to be for the runoff. We do meet the Jordan Lake accounting rules, and then also try to balance that with some of the other things. So essentially we're trying to identify some flexibility in the stormwater requirement so that we can maintain some of the other requirements that we were obligated as part of the conditional zoning for the property. So we've identified a number of best management practices, some that were not even adopted by the state, and we've incorporated them into the site plan to try to get there. And we get very close, and there's a lot of estimating and judgment that's made in how these models work so you can meet the requirements. So the actual ordinance is pretty rigid. It's either a yes or a no, it's very technical at some point. We're looking for some flexibility for the board to basically say, well, this meets the spirit of it, but not exactly based on the ordinances there. So we're trying to figure out how to best move forward. I think after talking with town staff and the town attorney, there's probably other ways to go about it, but we've proposed an amendment that would at least allow for some flexibility in administering those requirements.
Ken, what's the urgency on this from your standpoint in terms of adopting, say, the ordinance you've come up with tonight, or as opposed to giving staff more time to evaluate options?
For Shelton Station, right, we've been at it for a very long time, so we're trying to continue to move forward through the CUP process. And I think we meet the requirement very close, but at the letter of the ordinance, we don't. The reality is we haven't looked at, I think town staff looked at about three or four other developments. So, I want to be careful not to prescribe a solution just for this project. I mean, I think there is some there is probably some more technical analysis that could be done. So we proposed a very kind of broad and general modification to it to basically allow a variety of projects to be kind of interpreted that way. But for our for Shelton Station in specific, it's really just we've been at it for over 2.5 years, so we really do need to keep on moving forward, and we've got some contractual obligations that we need to meet.
So what kind of time frame would you be looking at for it not to be, you know, particularly damaged by, you know, if this gets delayed first?
Less than 60 days would be my preference.
Okay.
So like the January public hearing date, I guess, is what that amounts to, or what you're asking for.
That would be very helpful.
I'm not sure which of you had your hand.
Michelle. I have a question. It might be for staff, and it's for us to consider. You all in the report are 6% over the runoff calculation. Mm-hmm. That's correct?
That's correct.
And so I'm wondering if we pass something that isn't specific enough, and 6% is different here, I think, than it could be at another project. I'm just wondering if we need a range. I'm not suggesting that we pass the ordinance either. I'm just wondering the implication of saying 6% is okay here, knowing that 6% is different somewhere else. Is 8% okay? Is 10% okay? So that's,
yeah, they're all just numbers. I mean,
that's right.
Yeah.
So. Yeah, that's why I'm thinking that if it was for an upcoming public hearing, that the choice two that allows staff to prepare an ordinance with flexibility, that's something that we can then consider as compared to what Ken's come up with. I'm sorry.
Lydia?
Well, I guess in my what I was going to say was kind of along the lines of Dan, but I was going to also ask if our attorney, if Mike, had a chance to look at the proposed ordinance and if you know, that, I mean, it seems to make sense that I'm sure there's something we'd rather incorporate into that, but if you had a chance to look at it.
I have, and that's one approach. I mean, this approach is sort of consistent with the our parking requirements, which basically say establish a presumption of so many spaces, but you have flexibility to vary that. That's one way to deal with it. The other way to deal with it is to draft something which we already have something in the ordinance that provides that if in the context of a CUP application, during the period of the application after it's filed and before it's acted upon, the ordinance changes, then the board can conclude that it doesn't need to apply that ordinance to that project. That provision doesn't help in this circumstance because the change took place after the rezoning but before the CUP application. So another alternative is to amend that section to say that you just exempt a project that basically just to say it, to add conditional use or conditional rezonings to the list of circumstances under which if a change occurs during the pendency of that process, the board could essentially decide it wouldn't apply the provisions. So those are two different ways of dealing with the same issue. This provides more general relief for other circumstances where a claim could be made or a proposal could be made that would vary the requirements of the ordinance, again, like the parking, or the other alternative is to do something that would basically just allow for the exemption of a project in this circumstance but would otherwise not provide that flexibility. Mm-hmm. So it's a long answer to your question. Yes, I have looked at it. Yes, that's one way to go. It probably needs some tweaking. There's another way to go, or no way to go at all.
Just a quick follow-up to that. Sure. And the other, I noticed that Ken was, or maybe we were suggesting January public hearing, but I noticed that staff in our packet is suggesting a February public hearing. So I guess I just wanted to comment from staff as to whether January would be possible or if it needs to be February. So.
Thanks. Tina Moon, the Planning Department. The timeline was suggested based on the getting things to the advisory boards, the typical process of getting things through.
Yeah.
Jackie and then me.
Yeah. If it needs to go to the advisory boards, I think that that's an important part of our process. I kind of am not in favor of making a lot of exceptions. because as with other things, if you make an exception for one, then I guarantee you that we are going to have other developers coming in and asking for the same exceptions, just like we have with other things with this project. And I believe that when your project has an impact on the community, you're responsible for the impact, whether that's parking or whether it's water. So if 6% of the water is exempt, who's responsible for that 6% of the water? The rest of the community is responsible for that 6% of the water. And if we say, for one, you're not responsible for that whatever percentage is, then the other developments, and we have many that are going to get started really soon now that the economy, hopefully, is turning around, they're all going to ask for that exception, just like they're all going to ask for the other exceptions that we've made. So we make rules, and we either change the rules. This rule is an important rule. It has to do with our water. And we've talked over and over again about how much this community has sacrificed for the quality of the water. So I'm not even in favor of moving forward with it. I think making exceptions means that other people then bear the responsibility of your actions. And that becomes a financial burden to the rest of the community to one degree or another. And it opens the door for other people to ask for the same exceptions. So I'm not
in favor of that.
Let me ask the planning staff, someone on the planning staff, to address this question, which is, well, obviously, it's Ken Ryder who's making this particular request, and he's obviously doing it because the current rules are proving difficult to meet, or maybe essentially almost impossible to meet for his particular project. But I guess what I'm wondering is, you know, does this ultimately amount to a problem with the rule, or does it amount to a problem with the project that he is trying to build? That is, say, is it, you know, because what I'm picturing is, or what I'm concerned about is, you know, are other people who would like to do downtown redevelopment projects in the future facing basically the same problem? I mean, clearly they're facing the same burden from a technical point of view, but, you know, how achievable is the standard that we have set? That's really the question I'm asking.
Sure. Well, I think, as you mentioned in your comments and staff mentioned when this ordinance came forward in June, we do anticipate that there very well may be a need to come back and make some minor modifications. In this particular project, my understanding from the environmental planner, we spoke about this project this morning, was that they, in fact, are really quite close. And one of the questions which I think remains to be answered is what will be the Jordan Lake value for pervious pavement, and that you've estimated what may turn out to be a low figure. So I think you've estimated about 40% to 50%. Some other projects who are in a similar process now have estimated a much higher percentage, and we're waiting for the committee reviewing the Jordan Lake rules to come up with what assessment they will give for permeable pavement. Should they go with a higher percentage, this project may be fine. Should they go with 50% or lower, there may be some need for some additional stormwater management devices, maybe an additional bioretention pond, something of that sort. It may also be the percentage is from what I gather, is so small that it may be something that is okay for the CUP approval and could be resolved through the construction plan process. So it isn't a matter where this is such a big burden for this particular project that we really need to think, oh, we've made a huge mistake with this with this amendment.
I can comment. I mean, remember the discussion we had about the rezoning and the different features that we have. So a lot of the green and sustainable features about having a permeable pavement in the parking lot, having bioretention, having irrigation and reuse of water, those are all things that we've implemented, and those get us close to the requirement. Essentially what happens, and I'll do just a very quick, you have a certain amount of runoff calculated on your site, and then you're limited on how much more runoff you can have beyond that. What Tina was talking about is permeable pavements. How much credit do you get for permeable pavement? how much water actually gets absorbed and is, does not run off. Mm-hmm. And it's the state doesn't have requirements yet of how to calculate that. We've made an estimation of what that is. Moving that a few percentages would probably absorb much of that 6,000 cubic feet of volume that we're talking about. So there's just uncertainty, one, with the, you know, how the ordinance will be implemented, and also just some of the technical analysis that goes into the calculations. So I think the result is right, that the ordinance is resulting in the types of stormwater best management practices that the town wants. It's just really kind of a technical conundrum of how do you move forward with something when it doesn't meet it. So what we proposed is really a stormwater requirement of flexibility versus what Mike talked about, which was kind of, well, we really want to be grandfathered under the old rules. I think we're trying to do the right thing by actually putting in place the actual features that get the right result. We just can't get there without expending exorbitant amounts of money beyond what we've put in there. I think most people would say it's a pretty aggressive stormwater management system for the type of project that we're putting in place.
Sammy, and then let's try to
figure out what we're doing. So I hear, like, I agree with Jackie, I agree with Mark. I do think that once we start making exceptions, we right off the bat start eroding. But I also heard staff early on saying that we may have to tweak. So given that there is no established credit for stormwater for permeable surfaces, maybe as a town we could assume that standard and then once those rules happen, then we can adjust accordingly, less or
conform
more,
to whatever
conform
they are.
To whatever they are. Hmm. And I think that would acknowledge the fact that you are so close, that this is the new rule, that we are testing it out, that you happen to be a developer that is in the crosshairs of the testing of it, and recognizing the fact that you have done a lot of positive environmental things on this property that I think we should reward. I'm glad that it isn't to the extreme where we have to rework the whole ordinance, and that this would be signaling a more fundamental issue. But I think that may be one way to go forward.
Michelle,
when is the committee going to come back? Do you all have a sense of when the committee is going to?
When the state is going to come
yeah.
up with a number?
I kind of got the impression it was any time. Is that yours?
Well, it's been any time since waiting. October. Mm-hmm. So yeah. It's overdue, I think.
But, although any time does mean any time.
May I just make one statement in response to your question, Mark, which is about how downtown development in general is affected by the regulation. And for the most part, the downtown is fairly developed. You know, that is to say there's a fair amount of impervious surface there mm-hmm. already. This particular property, you know, the Shelton Station property, it's four lots that make up the site. You know, it's really relatively undeveloped. I mean, there are two houses on it, or there were two houses on it, you know, initially. Now there's one. And otherwise, there's a lot of, you know, undeveloped pervious surface. So its characteristics are somewhat different. And so the effect of the volume control provision, because the pre-development, you know, amount of runoff and the post-development runoff changes significantly with the amount of impervious surface being added to the site. So it is sort of, you know, and often it's good, Mike always says that, you know, we do get a test case in the door that does really challenge your ordinance. And he has a term for that. I can't remember what it is at this moment. But, you know, but it is sort of almost a worst-case scenario.
The meat grinder.
Yeah.
Anyway,
so it is somewhat different from many of the properties in the downtown. We have tested it on, you know, we did run the Jordan Lake accounting tool. Well, actually, we had an applicant run it on another downtown site, and it's a significantly different outcome for that site. But that's partly the situation, so.
Well, can I make the suggestion that I mean, I guess I'm willing to hear about some. I agree that it's sort of problematic to grant an exemption, but I'd be interested in hearing about some revisions to the ordinance that the staff might draft. I don't know how I would vote on them. I guess it depends partly on what they are, but I'm willing to have a public hearing about that. But we need to wrap this up for tonight because you know this is a very technical topic, and we don't have all the information really in front of us. So
Well, I was just going to say that it sounds like we, at least from what Dan was saying, and Sammy, that the number two, that the asking staff to prepare an ordinance that provides some flexibility is at least where we are today. And I think Sammy's
so can you characterize that as a motion?
Well, mine wasn't necessarily flexibility, but for establishing that standard until we actually know, because I am afraid of the erosion aspect.
But we may not. I think we need flexibility until the Jordan.
Right. Okay. Yeah.
That's what I'm saying.
I see. As a sort of interim provision.
Right. Exactly.
Okay. All right. That's. I like that motion. Is there a second?
And then that would refer to EAB, I'm
assuming that that would be for a February public hearing.
Randy, I
so
just want to...
Yes.
Regular.
I would like for staff to understand and I hope that that's part of what you're proposing, that they come back to us with what that standard might be, and or if Jordan Lake rules are clear on that, then what that is. That's what I mean by it. I don't necessarily favor flexibility that will just
I think sort of broad long term flexibility in the ordinance was not what the motion was from what I understood.
But it gives us some breathing room between now and time.
All right. That makes some sense, and the public hearing may be obviated if depending on what the state does in the interim. So
yeah, and just to be clear, there's we meet the Jordan Lake accounting rules. It's really about the town of Carrboro volume runoff, the volume ordinance that deals with runoff. That's where the difficulty is. I mean, we've always been planning to meet the Jordan Lake accounting rules, but it was that new ordinance that really made it difficult to get there, but even though we're close. So just to be clear, I don't think we need to revisit the Jordan Lake accounting rules.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Right.
So I think that's...
All right. Very good. We need to go ahead and move on. So it's been moved and seconded that we schedule a February public hearing on the possibility of some flexibility up until that point where the state has decided about impervious surface or semi-permeable surface rules. All those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed?
No.
The matter passes 6-1. All right.
Thank you.
That brings us to a request to set a public...
Thanks.
Request to set a public hearing on a land use ordinance text amendment relating to provisions authorizing a change in use from one nonconforming use to another. Very briefly, staff.
Tina, you want to Mike, however you want to do it. Just a real brief overview of the text amendment. Very brief.
Through this quickly. This was brought forth as an effort from staff to try to find another strategy, another approach to try to come to kind of a common ground for the owners of Johnny's and the neighbors. I'll skip the overview. I think we all know the history. When we have approached this in before, we've looked at three main options, or really two main options. One is to consider rezoning the property either through the conditional use approach, which is conditional use zoning and conditional use permit at the same time, or just a conditional rezoning where you do the rezoning first and the permit second. That is what we came forth with in November to set a public hearing. The other option was to look at amending our existing nonconforming use section. I won't go through the comparison again. When staff looked at this section in the ordinance originally, we felt that this was kind of a difficult threshold to meet. The tough provision is what I've highlighted in yellow, because it's a matter of proving, if you will, the burden of proof that adding new uses wouldn't have a more inverse effect on the neighbors. The proposed amendment, I've written this all here really for the benefit of the audience. The new portions are in yellow. These are the same three sections. The key section is really this part three, the part that we thought was so challenging. And this gives an opportunity for landowners who have legally non-conforming uses to change those uses to add more uses subject to board approval through a conditional use permit. So it would still require a public hearing. And these, so that is the item which is before you this evening, is to consider amendments to the land use ordinance, which would allow for these changes to the changing and non-conforming use. And so the options here tonight were either to continue on with the rezoning where the public hearing has already been set, or to pursue the land use text amendments, which you have before you tonight. After we submitted the materials and you received your agenda packet, a third option emerged, which is an email which I believe we all received from the neighbors, which they had put together based on their continuing dialogue, both the neighbors and Dr. Jan Halley, who's here tonight, where they tried to come to some agreement among them and came up with a list of uses, and with the hope that they could just kind of call those grandfathered and move on and not require rezoning and not necessarily require additional permitting. So what we've, I guess your decision for this evening is how to direct staff to move forward, either to go ahead with the text amendment, which we have outlined, or to ask to direct staff to explore a little bit more thoroughly the suggestion that came through the email from the neighbors. And that's something that we've read through, but we've not really had a chance to kind of thoroughly digest. I think there's a few things that kind of raise flags for us, but we're certainly willing to look at that a little more closely if that would be your direction.
Tina, given that the first two options only require setting a public hearing, is there any reason we can't continue the public hearing we have, add the second public hearing, and between now and then you can explore option three, and then we'll have a staff report at the end of January that we could then use to determine what the best approach is. Is that like too cumbersome for you all, or too complicated?
I think we can certainly explore that. The one timing issue that we have for, there's certainly legal notice for public hearings. The one thing that makes the rezoning a little bit more challenging for staff is the need to send out mailed notice to neighbors. So there is a little bit of a timing element involved with, checking addresses and so forth and going before joint review.
But the rezoning, though, is up to the applicant. Is that right?
Sure. The applicant is here.
If they want to withdraw the rezoning application, that would be their prerogative.
That's right.
And that would, by perforce, eliminate the public hearing. But option two is staff-initiated,
right.
So that's up to us if we want to schedule that public hearing. And it sounds like you all think that's fruitful.
Yeah. But that public hearing would be a text amendment, so there wouldn't be notice to the neighborhood. In other words,
right. Not required by law.
Exactly. I mean, you could provide whatever notice you want to, but.
Jackie and then me.
I think if after what seems like years of controversy and tension, if the neighbors and the owners have come to some kind of suggestion and agreement, we should really honor that as to the degree that we can. And so I would choose option three, which is to direct staff to explore the approach suggested by the neighbors and report back. That's where we've been trying to get. I think because if we use the other ones.
Are the owners on board with that?
That's what the email we got said.
Are they okay? Okay.
Well, it was from both of them.
Because that's not what it says here.
I don't think I've seen it, but speaking of which, John Montavon is signed up to speak. Why don't we hear from John?
Thanks for the opportunity to speak. We just saw this proposal, and really what the proposal amounts to is to change the land use ordinance to make it easier for grandfathered properties to switch uses. And, you know, I look back and I look at grandfathered use, and I say, well, that just makes tremendous sense. As I read the land use ordinance, it makes tremendous sense. You, like our neighborhood, you know, 50 years ago, you expand into an area, you're proposing that it be residential, but there's an existing business there. And so you say to that business, well, you know, we can't take your business away. You can continue your business. You've built value in that. But you also have to make a guarantee to the people moving into that area that says that business is not going to change into a bar or to a lead smelting factory or to something else. What you have before you really...
Are you talking about option three?
Yes, I'm talking about option three.
Option two is the staff proposal.
Oh, I'm sorry, option two. Excuse me. Yes. So what option two really does is the grandfathered use is makes a lot of sense. It guarantees the business its livelihood. It guarantees neighbors who are purchasing homes and committing some mortgages a guarantee that that business is not going to substantially change. And so the land use ordinance is purposefully strict in terms of changing a grandfathered use. It makes it difficult to do. When a business owner buys into a grandfathered use, they know the restrictions of that use as much as I know the restrictions when I buy my property. What this proposal does is it
the third option
number
proposal.
This is number two, the proposal to change the land use ordinance. What this proposal does is it proposes to make it easier for a grandfathered business to change their use and sets a standard lower than anyone else in town. The text itself says simply that, basically ignoring the neighbor effect, that it will benefit the general public. When you talk about changing the land use ordinance or going through, when you talk about changing zoning, the standard is that it promote the public health, safety, and welfare. In addition, what's proposed by town staff allows consideration of the hypothetical. So it says we can consider what might happen if we don't allow the change in use. So a business owner can say, well, this will fill up with rats and become a garbage dump. And so the aldermen are allowed to consider that and say, well, that's a reason why we have to allow a change in use. I feel like the amendment is hastily put together, that the timing is bad, that it doesn't allow, by doing it at the same time, it doesn't allow full consideration of the effect of the land use ordinance. It doesn't allow consideration of the long-term effect of this for the rest of the town. It deals with one business. And finally, this just adds controversy and divisiveness to an issue from the town staff. When the neighbors and the property owners are really successfully agreeing, and they need the support and the endorsement of the town.
Thanks, John.
Does this mean you're against option three?
No, it's speaking about option two.
Okay. Changing the land use ordinance.
Okay. Have you?
All right. Because we're kind of leaning towards option three.
Yeah. Oh, yes, option three I fully support, and that's what I'm urging you to support.
Okay.
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 All right.
Because it sounded like you were.
All right, so could we have a...
I didn't know the options when I came up. I was.
That's okay. Can we have a motion then? It sounds like people want to pursue option three. Do they not?
I really want to be clear. So the owner is here. Would you just?
I'm gonna have my. Okay, let's go.
Just because I want to, because that was confusing, and I just want to be sure that we're all clear.
I think we're in this.
You guys all send me messages. You gotta be quick. You gotta tell
me. We've been getting along, which is really nice. The opportunity to do some few extra things, which we've agreed upon, which Susan will talk about, I think the neighbors are comfortable with. We're very happy about
it.
I won't read them all.
I did get the email. I just
read
it.
Did you get the email?
So,
we all got it.
We saw it.
Yeah.
So do you want us to sort of review it?
And no, yeah, no, I think no, we're... Okay, so could I have a motion then?
I think the gist is that this would be accessory uses that we could...
Right. Okay. Is there a motion to direct staff to pursue option 3?
Moved and seconded.
Okay. All right. It's been moved by Jackie and seconded by Michelle. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All right. All those opposed. That passes unanimously.
Thank you all for all the work and tears. And
all right. Good job.
Mark, could we defer the option 1 hearing again so that... no work will be done on that until...
Yeah, that was going to be my question. Is I think in light of what I've heard that the rezoning hearing may not be necessary. I like Dan's suggestion. Why don't we reschedule it to like our February public hearing date for the moment, so that staff can treat it as sort of on hold while we pursue option 3 and make sure that that's going to work for everybody. Mm-hmm. And then, assuming that we work it out by that method, then presumably we'll do away with the rezoning hearing at a later date.
What will we do with that?
Okay, so is there a motion to reschedule the public hearing to the February date? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed? Matter passed unanimously. Thanks. Good point, Dan. All right.
It is 8:30.
The last one's off the Irish.
I've got a suggestion for number 4 and 5. If you don't want to have a meeting on December the 11th, we have PowerPoint presentations for those. I could send those to you and then just call each one of you, or you can give me feedback. If you don't want to have a meeting, it's certainly up to you.
Let me. Here's the question I would like to raise is I believe actually Thursday we have a Assembly of Governments meeting where we're meeting with the Chapel Hill Town Council and the County Commission. And
at 7?
Yes.
Something like that. And I believe that solid waste management is one of the key issues up for discussion on the agenda. I haven't really looked at that agenda, but that's one of the key issues for discussion. So I'm just wondering whether it would be worth going ahead and hearing item 4.
Yeah.
And we'll defer on 5 and 6, is that right?
Yep, that'll work.
And meet next week or not?
No.
No.
Well,
then
I don't know.
Have to,
no.
Then we don't have to.
Then I don't think we have to. But I think it makes sense to go ahead and hear at least briefly the update on solid waste before we have this discussion with the county.
Try to go quickly. Good evening, everyone.
Hello.
The last update I provided was in June of this past year, and we talked about the changes that we need to make because of the landfill closing. And just in a summary, our municipal solid waste trash will need to go to the transfer station, a new location, whereas our yard waste construction debris and recycling will still continue out at the Eubanks Road site. Quickly, you recognize these trucks. The fully automated side loader is used for residential, front loader for our commercial, boom truck for brush piles. The one thing that has come to light since the last time we talked, there is now the possibility of another transfer station, and I believe I touched on this briefly in June, and you can see just a little bit of the comparison. The distance is the same, but the travel time is a little quicker. This this one is out kind of southeast Durham off of 147, whereas the City of Durham one is in the northeast part of town around on 85. So there is a little bit of difference here, and it really shows up in the labor hours, although not significantly enough that we still need to make the change. Here's a little bit of the cost analysis. And this is different from when we met the last time. The rate we had the last time was assuming Orange County tipping fee was going up, and it did not. It is now at $57. We've adjusted the fuel, and you see slightly then the difference in the additional annual costs. When you're looking at the tipping looking at the tipping fee difference. These are current rates, and these are ones that have been floated, but we will need to negotiate and meet with these people to get some sort of final number. The change in the collection for the dumpster service, we now do it all in easily in an hour, in one day with one truck, but with the additional almost 2 hours of driving time, we won't, and that's why we need an additional truck, which was approved. And is in the process. We are purchasing that, so we're moving along with that aspect. Probably the most significant change then is in the single-family residential, and this is what was proposed in June, and where we have one truck out now for 4 days and two trucks on Friday, yard waste Wednesday through Friday. We are now proposing to go to 3 days, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday with two trucks, and this way we don't have to add any equipment, and we can still accomplish the same amount, and actually an improved level of service, because now we can pick up the yard waste in the early part of the week on Mondays and Tuesdays, and since most people do yard waste on weekends, I think this is a nice mm-hmm. improvement. Plus, we'll get it in 2 days instead of three, so we're concentrating the operations. And I just wanted to quickly... the other important aspect, we have a plan here on the, this is the map that's in your packet, and basically the town will be broken up into, let me try to bring this down here real quick, into the blue at the bottom is Wednesday, yellow is Thursday, and the red at the top is Friday. And there will be two trucks in each of these routes. And then the town will basically be divided in half when it comes to yard waste. On the one, again, it'll be the first and third of the month, and then the second and fourth. So Wednesday, the blue at the bottom and half of the yellow will be picked up 1 week, and then the following week will be the other half of the yellow and the red. Basically the same kind of way that we're split now, but done more efficiently. Can see you're all. Oops. Here we go back.
No, that's
this.
Impressive, George. I mean, you've obviously put a whole lot of thought and effort into.
Yeah, and I wish Chris Clark was here tonight, who did the, who had done all the. Doggone it, I'm sorry.
This is higher math.
Right now, I can't click the right button, so.
Well, I didn't compliment you on your AV skills, so that's okay. That's.
There we go. Okay, so this is the plan that we're proposing. It avoids three Monday holidays for rescheduling trash, although two of those we will have to do the yard waste, and we'll have to adjust for the other holidays, which we currently do. So people will either be moved up or moved behind accordingly. This is kind of the plan for the implementation. We've already talked about purchasing the new truck. We'll begin our education program in April. Starting with online maps and so forth. We update our brochure every 2 years, and it works out that that's the schedule this year. So we're taking this opportunity then to not only implement the new schedule and tell people of their new day, and roughly two-thirds to three-quarters of the town will have a new day, but same level of service. So once we get through a couple of days and people's memories are challenged, we'll make it. And then in the FY13-14, we're looking at hiring one solid waste equipment operator to offset the lost productivity. And then the switch will be pulled on the week of July 1st, which is a Monday.
Wow.
These are areas of continued collaboration with the county as well as Chapel Hill. Initiation of a new interlocal government agreement, potential siting and construction of a new transfer station, possible reestablishment of the SWAB group, and then both towns, Chapel Hill and our town, has expressed an interest in organics collection and disposal, and pay-as-you-throw has been broached again, and I think what I noted in the report that the town will begin researching, it's been 5 years since we did any detail on this, so we'll begin looking at this to see if there's some potential.
Is that fertilizer?
Go ahead.
Thanks, George, for these updates. I read the report Chapel Hill put out, and in it, it doesn't favor pay-as-you-throw or organics collection as much, but I encourage you to check it out. And why they aren't encouraging pay-as-you-throw is that they haven't really sussed out the RFID technology and weight technology to the degree and the retrofit sense that I think is possible. And I think there's an opportunity as we disincentivize and by raising the cost on pay-as-you-throw in a way that would basically tax trash, essentially, to the point where a quarter of our waste that is food, people really take seriously making that compost in their own homes. It would make organic disposal a lot more viable, not in the sense of shipping it, which is why it's so unpalatable in that study, because it's just an added cost of more trucks to take to Brooks and the tipping fees and all that's involved. But thinking more in lines of having that be processed on site by residences, you know, to really make that as a viable. But thinking of pay-as-you-throw in tandem with organics, so that we can really be incentivizing with a lot of like fossil fuels, for example. There's the idea that if we could only tax the things we don't want, so that people could thereafter redirect money towards the things that we want. This is a case in point of an opportunity in that regard.
I think I pointed out that there's a no matter what we do here with pay-as-you-throw, there's things that need to be kept in mind, the compatibility with our collection system, and this is what Chapel Hill's wrestling with as well, since they're looking at possibly changing enforcement, budget impacts, effectiveness of the reduction, you know, you go to all of this, and if you don't reduce a lot, much like what you're saying, there may be a better way of doing it instead of collecting it, that it be done in the home or in the yard. And then waste shifting, that you don't have one town and then things show up elsewhere.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's all I have.
Okay.
Thanks, George.
That's really helpful. I would just like to, before we wrap up this item, just point out to the board that one issue that our county commissioners need to make a decision about that has kind of been delayed as various options solid waste options have been studied is the possibility of going from those the kind of two different blue bins that we have right now that you carry out to the curb to going to a rollout cart system for the recycling collection. Mm-hmm. I think the county was poised to implement the rollout cart system a year and a half or 2 years ago, but because of all the sort of turmoil in the solid waste world, they've been holding off on doing that. And having looked at that issue in some detail, I just want to point out that it would actually reduce the cost of collection, so that the cost of purchasing the carts, the cost of the county of purchasing the carts over a course of about 3 or 4 years, all of that money is returned in terms of the savings on the contract for the collection cost. And also, and I think almost more importantly, having rollout carts would make participating in the recycling programs much easier, especially for people with disabilities or senior citizens or people who don't have a whole lot of upper body strength, that a rollout cart is simply easier to use. And the experience in other communities has apparently been that when switching to a rollout cart that there's experienced a significant increase in the amount of participation. That's what happened in Durham. They went to that type of system. And so I'm hopeful that we can kind of help the county commissioners see that that there's really no longer any reason to be waiting and holding back on that, that our community, you know, wants a rollout cart system and that we should go ahead and do it. So
just to point out, in that study, I pointed out that buying the carts with RFID already in it is $1 versus retrofitting, which is $10. So I want to encourage the county to consider that option so that we can take advantage of the technology and further incentivize recycling.
That's an interesting point. All right. Very good. Well, I think that brings
us. We have a resolution on that. I'll move it. Has been A.
Thank you. All right. It's been moved for.
Attachment A, and seconded. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed. Matter passed unanimously.
Dan's last resolution.
I believe that brings us to this item that I have before me. I'm going to go up to the podium to read this.
Are the people out in the hallway, or is the door closed? Or we can probably
open
the
door.
Door.
Could you come up and Dan, please?
Yeah.
Hey, Misha, you want to come up to the podium?
I'd like to read this resolution and then ask for a motion from the Board of Aldermen. Whereas Daniel Coleman has served the people of the town of Carrboro for 6 years, and whereas Dan has used his time on the Board of Aldermen to help advocate for a more sustainable future for the people and the town, and whereas Dan has served on numerous committees of the town of Carrboro, including the Carrboro Economic Sustainability Commission, the Carolina North Leadership Advisory Council, the Chapel Hill Transit Partners Committee, the Orange County Home Consortium, and the Carrboro Local Living Economy Task Force, among many others. And whereas Dan's leadership on issues of environmental stewardship have helped make Chapel Hill Transit the most successful public transportation system in the state of North Carolina, and whereas Dan's advocacy for social justice and social equity have been an inspiration to our entire community, and whereas Dan's work on expanding bicycle and pedestrian facilities have helped Carrboro attain the silver-level bicycle-friendly community recognition from the League of American Bicyclists, and whereas Dan's concern for those at a financial disadvantage in our community has helped create over a dozen new permanently affordable homes for chronically homeless individuals in our community, and whereas Dan has been involved in local government in Orange County for well over 2 decades, and whereas Dan was a founding member of Citizens for Alternatives to Sharon Harris and the founder of the Orange County Green Party, and whereas Dan has consistently spoken up for the people of the town of Carrboro and has used his time on the Board of Aldermen to help create a more economically, socially, and environmentally sustainable world, and whereas Dan's family commitments now call upon him to leave our community, now therefore be it resolved that the Carrboro Board of Aldermen expresses its gratitude to the Honorable Alderman Daniel Coleman for his dedication and service to our town and larger community, and be it further resolved that the Board of Aldermen wishes Dan and his family outstanding good fortune in their endeavors in Australia, and be it further resolved that the Board of Aldermen hopes that Dan and his family will periodically return to visit the town of Carrboro and looks forward to such occasions, and be it further resolved that the Board of Aldermen thanks and honors Daniel Coleman for his many years of public service to Carrboro, Chapel Hill, and Orange County, this the 4th day of December 2012.
Could I have a motion, please? All those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed. The matter passes unanimously. I'm also authorized and empowered to present you with this plaque that I'm going to take the liberty of pulling out here. It says, to Dan Coleman, in recognition of his dedicated service to the town of Carrboro, 2006 to 2012.
Awesome. Thank you.
Thank you. You two gentlemen, stay right here. I believe there is one more resolution that's for the
stay here.
Okay.
Just Misha or Dan and Misha?
Okay.
Because
we have another resolution. And this one says, a resolution honoring Micah Asher Jules Coleman, Misha. Whereas Misha Coleman moved to Carrboro, North Carolina in April of 2005 with his parents, Dan Coleman and Paula Michaels. And whereas Misha has attended Community Independent, McDougal Elementary, and McDougal Middle Schools, where his sense of humor and fondness for intellectual debate has made him an outstanding member of his class.
And whereas Misha, through hard work and discipline, holds a black belt in Taekwondo. Whereas Misha has for many years been a star of Carbo's 4th of July and Halloween celebrations with his many scary and award-winning costumes, including the memorable Red Devil Dragon Ghost, which won Scariest Costume when he was just 4, and including other costumes such as Vampire Zombie and Sarah Palin's version of Paul Revere. He does come from a political family. And whereas Misha has ridden in great cars with his dad in the annual Carbo Chapel Hill holiday parades, waving and making jokes with parade watchers. And whereas Misha is a close follower of politics and understands the issues better than many people 3 times his age, and is always prepared to engage in a lively and informed debate. And whereas Misha has been very supportive of his father, Alderman Dan Coleman, by helping him with his campaigns and by enduring countless long meetings and endless political conversations at Weaver Street Market, Jesse's, Johnny's, and other local gathering spots. And whereas Misha and his parents will be moving from Carrboro to Melbourne, Australia in January 2013. Now, therefore, the Mayor and Board of Aldermen, on behalf of the people of Carrboro, do firmly resolve that Carrboro will miss Misha Coleman and wish him many grand adventures in his new home. Be it further resolved that it is our hope that he and his family will come to visit soon, adopted this 4th day of December, 2012. Here you go, and I get to kiss you.
Been moved. Is there a second?
Is there a second?
It's been moved and seconded. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed. Matter passed unanimously. And now before we adjourn, I just have one or two more things. One is that I wanted to recognize that we have a number of distinguished guests with us tonight. In part to participate in the reception we're going to have afterwards, but without belaboring the long list, I especially wanted to recognize our state representative, Verla Insko, is here. Thank you.
A brave woman.
She is a brave woman. I tell you, going to Raleigh next year, it takes some courage.
Thanks,
good luck, Verla.
All right.
Get some courage. All right. Our state senator from our district, Ellie Kinnaird, was not able to be here tonight, but she sent along this message and asked me to read it. And it says, "Dear Mayor and Board, I'm sorry that I'm unable to join you tonight as you recognize Dan Coleman as he leaves the board because I'm participating in a forum in Chatham County. I have known Dan for many years, first as an activist in our community and then as an alderperson. We have relied on Dan as a progressive voice to whom we turned for advice and direction both as a citizen and then an elected official. Dan's inspiration to do the right thing and always to do better has been a beacon for all of us. Dan reminded us to think of the consequences of our actions, to think of those who did not have a voice and those who could not participate fully due to economic or other disadvantages in the power structure. He will be missed. Good luck, Dan, and be the conscience, inspiration, and burr under the saddle down under. Best wishes and Godspeed from your friend and fellow laborer in the vineyards, Ellie Kinnaird."
Nice.
All right.
So, don't I get to say anything?
No.
You do.
Just for once, no.
Okay.
Give me the timer. No. No. Please do, Dan.
Well, I'm going to make a speech because I get to. Well, first of all, thank you all for the kind words and those resolutions, and thanks to everyone who's come out for this. And I have to say that at first I thought I was just going to jot down a few notes and make some off-the-cuff remarks, but as I started writing, I got very carried away, so I hope you'll bear with me. And it's interesting because it starts with last week I was contemplating what I might say tonight if I had to say anything, and it turns out I could have not bothered since I guess I didn't have to say anything. But my friend Maria reminded me that in December 2005, when I was contemplating whether I wanted to become an alderman or not, that I came to the meeting where Jackie and Randy and Mark were sworn in, and it was also the last meeting of Diana McDuffie and Mike Nelson, and that I was really moved by Diana's remarks about her experience as an alderman and how meaningful it was to her and what a great way it was to be part of the Carborough community. And that was very influential to me in deciding that I wanted to put my hat in the ring, so to speak, to be an alderman myself. And so I went actually and re-listened to Diana's farewell, and she said all the great things about Carborough that I feel like, even though the last campaign is over a year ago, I just feel like I've been saying them a lot. But all the things about the Mill Village and the Carmel and the Farmers Market and everything we love about Carborough. And it's true. It's just such an amazing town. It's such a privilege to be here. But for me also, especially coming off the recent political season and just the heightened awareness of everything going on in the world, Carborough is sort of like a dream on a sea of devastation. And what I mean by that is when I look around the world, I'll share just a few things I've encountered, like in the last week. One is an article in The Nation that in New York City, 72% of African-American children don't finish high school. That's connected to us. The next was an article about the rate at which cities in the Amazon rainforest are growing, cities that didn't exist 20, 30 years ago and are growing massively to house the workers, to destroy the rainforest, to meet our demand for products. We all know about the disappearance of the Arctic, of the ice in Greenland, of the coral reefs. I read earlier today a quote from Derek Jensen, who said to the effect that if aliens came to Earth and wrought comparable damage, we would declare all-out war and go to fight with them. But yet, we're doing this ourselves. And I think if we're honest with ourselves, as I try to be, we must feel helplessly complicit in these global problems. Not only do we fail to stop them, but we can't find a way not to make them worse. And sorry at my last meeting to be a bit of a downer, but it's kind of what to me is the truth I have to share. Someone writing in The Sun this month asks, would you rather have songbirds or running shoes? It's a question that might be just that stark. And we in Carborough pride ourselves on our road races, and running is an awfully good thing compared to lots of the other things we could be doing. But I think as a society, we've lost our moorings, and we no longer understand how to live sustainably on planet Earth. Pretty much everything we do makes matters worse, and we deceive ourselves with notions like sustainable growth. Growth under an economic regime that values neither human community nor the ecology sustains nothing other than social and planetary destruction. So we make Faustian bargains, like our much ballyhooed hotel downtown, or a, is Ken still here? I don't want to pick on Ken. I was going to mention the dense housing. And, you know, those are fine in the context we make those decisions. But the fact is that all the growth we permit is done without any kind of accounting to the actual environmental cost to planet Earth and ultimately to humanity. And none of it is really good. But still, we must find hope, and we must grope for a way forward. And that's what I've tried to do as alderman. And my colleagues know how frustrating that can be, how difficult, all the limitations you faced dealing with the state, for one thing, that all our powers are circumscribed by state government. But we've accomplished a lot, and there's a lot more for you all to do in Carborough. And I would say that the emphasis we've placed on the local living economy is really key. But it can't just mean buying Chinese manufactured goods in a Carborough-owned business. We have to find ways to expand on the farmer's market or the local crafts market and become more self-reliant and interdependent at the local and regional level. The local living economy is like the seed that sprouts in the midst of the rotting pod. My worry is that the pod is so vast that the rot may overwhelm the seed. Therefore, we must try to avoid compromise and do our utmost to localize our economy and at the same time disinvest from the global infrastructure of pollution and devastation. In doing so, we must become the poster child for combating climate change. We should be proud in Carborough of our fare free bus, our bicycle network, our sidewalks, and of our willingness to go toe-to-toe with the North Carolina DOT for progressive transportation policy. But we must import less, each and every one of us, and use less fossil fuel energy in all aspects of life. The great thing about Carborough is how many there are who understand this message and who are not complacent. Yet so many citizens of this town still, myself included, live in ways that are just too heavy a burden on the earth. A great challenge for a small town is to make progress on social justice, given that so much of our wealth is extracted from us to serve the power elite. Still, I was pleased this year when my years-long call for a housing wage for town employees found an eager ear in our new manager, David Andrews, who's promised a plan for the coming fiscal year. And I'll be pleased to learn in the coming months that my colleagues act to increase our flexibility and capacity to create and sustain affordable housing. And I want to remind my colleagues here of the adage that political office is a bully pulpit. Too rarely do we use our public office or the capabilities of government to reach out and educate and dialogue with our fellow citizens. An educated electorate, we all understand, is the foundation of democratic society and essential for future progress. Never be afraid to spend tax dollars to communicate with the citizenry. When I move next month, I'll find myself in a wonderful place with many of the same challenges, but without the obstacle of the world's most entrenched capitalist class calling the shots, and without half-witted evolution and climate change deniers running much of the state and national government. Still, there'll be much to do. Will I miss this dream of Carborough? Surely I will, especially the people who I've had a unique opportunity to know so intensely. I commend the town to the safekeeping of these six fine people who served with me on the board. And I want to say particularly how I'm heartened by our two newest members, who in a way might represent a generational shift away from the jaded politics of we baby boomers. No offense to Jackie, Randy, and Lydia. I can offend myself as much as I want. Michelle, as we all know, brings an amazing sensibility towards people and process, communication, and community. And Sammy, more than any of us, understands the challenges facing the planet, but couples that awareness with a facility for grassroots organizing and building sustainable alternatives. May Carborough find 1,000 like them. So enjoy what you have. Create more of it. Share it with all, but be ever mindful that our prosperity comes at incredible cost to the planet, and be prepared to repay that cost with interest. And in closing, I just want to say one thing about the person who's absent tonight, who's been mentioned in the previous resolution, which is my wife, Paula. And the reason she's absent is the reason she's always absent is because she works in the state of Iowa. Not everyone knows that. And her dedication to me and my happiness is what has allowed me to serve as alderman these years, because all that time she has commuted to her job there. And that, of course, is also was never a sustainable hypothesis for our family for very long. And so her time of making that sacrifice is done, and that's why we all get to move to a place with new opportunities to be together. And I just have one more thing in closing that to prepare to move on, which is my hat. Sammy, if you could help me tie on the crocodile teeth.
Tell me you don't have a machete.
I had it, but I saw the police chief was here. So thanks to everyone. Thank you all for coming out. Hope I didn't go on too long.
Please join us for a reception out in the hall. Dan, thank you. Excellent work.
Good luck, Sam. Good luck.
That hat looks really good.
Yeah, really.
Really good.
Yes. You guys do well in Australia.